It is February 17th, 2020. Welcome to No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, and Denny McClain. And so much to talk about today on this Monday morning. Michigan State basketball. Mel Tucker. It has been very little written in the local papers about Mel Tucker, who left Colorado for Michigan State last week. And there's a big mess in Colorado that should impact the way people think about him around here. But we'll talk about that.
Eli, they've written a lot about Tucker in the Detroit News, Detroit Prefest, M Live, so on and so forth. But it's like the Pollyanna-ish coverage. Sports Illustrated's coverage has been what it's all about. And that should be an embarrassment to Michigan sports media people.
It should be. And we're going to talk to Sean Keeler, who writes for the Denver Post, talking about what it's really like back there. And here's a headline, as you said, Bob, from Sports Illustrated, Pat Ford. We were hoodwinked inside the final hours of Mel Tucker as Colorado's head coach. First, let's talk about the teams on the floor, Michigan and Michigan State. Michigan State suffering a huge, stunning collapse to Maryland the other night, losing 67-60. Maryland ends with a 14-0 run at Breslin. Now, Jay Billis was doing that game, and he loves Tom Izzo, all the announcers. Everybody loves Tom Izzo. Billis, of course, telling us that there was plenty of time left in the game, which I hate all announcers, by the way. This is just my aside. I'm watching a game. I don't need an announcer to tell me that with a team down 7 with 3 minutes to go, there's still plenty of time left. I know, having watched sports all my life, how much time there is left and how many points there are to make up. But they always want to tell you, hey, keep watching because it isn't over yet. But the other thing he said I found very concerning, and he said Tom Izzo is as good as any coach in the country, or maybe he said he was the best, at what to do after timeouts, on coaching timeouts. Well, all that happened was coaching after timeouts late in that game, Maryland scored every time and ran off the last 14 points of the game as Michigan State seemed to collapse. And I want to ask you, Bob, you've been on Izzo's case. To me, he seems like he's in a constant state of fury, bordering on tears. And that look on his face is just so unique, this expression of frustration beyond belief. And I think he's losing it. I do not think he is coaching the way he used to coach. And I don't know what's happening at the end of games or why it seems like he's not really pulling it together in the end like he always has.
And here comes Dicky V, baby. He's tweeting today, and he says, listen up. These are the three most disappointing teams in college basketball this year. North Carolina, Texas, and Washington? This might be the most disappointing season in Michigan State history. As I said last week, there's never been a team in college basketball annals that started the season number one in the polls and then eventually fell out of the top 25. Cash wasn't getting any help. And a lot of these guys just aren't playing well. Are they afraid of Izzo's wrath? I really don't know. Say this. We've been down on Izzo a lot in the past because of situations very similar to this, except falling out of the top spot. He always seems to have these kids ready to play when it comes time for the NCAA tournament. So Tom deserves some slack on this. I'm going to cut him some slack on this. But right now, the whole thing is ridiculous. To think that number 9 Maryland was at Michigan State, and on TV they tried to play this up as some kind of a rivalry? Maryland's an ACC team. And I was stupid enough to think that Michigan State would win this game, because that's what happens all over the Big Ten and the major conferences. The home team almost always wins. The visitors are so intimidated. And yet here's Maryland, after Izzo doesn't have them ready to play. State doesn't show up in the first half. When Maryland gets a 39-24 lead in the first half, that 15-point margin is the largest road lead Maryland had all year, and Maryland was killing State on the boards at that point. What Tom Izzo team is not tough enough to rebound? What Tom Izzo team gets out-rebounded in a game? They had no answer for Anthony Collins, who's a better player than anybody
but
State
they fought
has.
Back,
the
Bob.
Whole thing was ridiculous.
But they did fight back, and they took a lead 67-60.
Yes, they did, and they took the lead, and then they blew it down the stretch. Yeah. A game that was winnable, that they came back and took the lead in the second half, and they should have won, and they lose 67-60.
Well, my personal opinion is after watching about half of the game, Tom looks really disinterested. He looks bored. At times, he looks like he wants to say something to the whole crew, and for some reason, he's not letting it go like he used to.
Is he bored or disgusted? He just seems disgusted.
Disgusted.
Yeah, not bored.
Maybe embarrassed. Because, listen, we got five guys on the court at times, and then we put another four guys in, and then we play another guy. Bottom line is, it's his coaching. He's the guy responsible for what's going on out there. Something's not right. Something's not right in the garage. You need to fix the garage.
Well, he's looking for shooters. He doesn't really have any great shooters, and he keeps
on
opening.
I told you Rocket Watts was going to be a great player at Michigan State. He disappeared in this game. Guys are in. Guys are out. What's going on with some of these players he's got?
Well, Bob, it could be called.
And the other thing that I noticed watching this game, did you just see how Tom had calmed down? It's like every time a guy made a mistake, he came over toward the sidelines, and Izzo was talking to him like a normal person would. So Tom looks like he's pulling out all the stops right now, and so far, it's not working.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he quits at the end of the season. I would not be surprised at all.
I have another national championship.
I have another aspect, and I want you to tell me if I'm wrong for bringing this up, okay? Because I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But throughout the game, and by the way, Xavier Tillman seems like a really good kid. I think there's I don't know him, but watching him play, looking at his expression, what I read about him, he's like a really, really good kid. Well, he's just turned 21. He has two children. They spent a lot of time during the game showing his wife in the stands who was going to have labor induced on Sunday and have their second child. So I'm thinking, you know, it seems like a great kid, but I'm saying, how does he support a family while playing for MSU? He was a father in high school. Two kids at 21, and he's prevented from working. He's not allowed to make a living as he's a college basketball player. So how does he do it? Who's paying for it? How is he supporting two children? Who's paying for his medical bills? Now, he does have two parents, although they are divorced, and they fought over, by the way, one of the reasons they divorced was they were fighting over what school he should go to because he transferred to a more prestigious school. But I don't know. This is another question mark about my college sports, and am I wrong to bring it up?
No, I don't think you're wrong to bring it up. I don't think this is an isolated case either. There's probably thousands of them out there, players that have got children and wives and what have you. I don't know how you handle it. Listen, I had a daughter in high school who got pregnant, and I know who had to handle it, the mother and father. So,
well, you have to make a living.
He can't make a living based upon the rules.
And if he wasn't a college basketball player and the terrific talent that he is, he'd be working right now to try and raise those two kids. So I just wonder. I don't know.
Well, let me answer your question, Eli, from a personal standpoint, because I was in his position at Michigan State University.
Yeah, that's right.
I was taking a full credit course load, and I was working a full-time job to support my family and taking out loans. Now, his full-time job is basketball. He's not supposed to be getting paid for that, and I doubt he's taken out any loans. So I think your question is well put. I doubt there's anything illegal going on. I don't think Tom Izzo cheats, but it's interesting.
Bob, but you weren't a basketball player. You know,
that's my point, Danny. That's what I'm saying.
You could work five different jobs. I mean, this kid can't legally, as they say, work.
The point Bob is making, though, is he really needed funds to pay for his kids.
You made the same point.
And he only had one kid when you were in college. You had the second one later, right?
Right.
So it's just, you know, pardon me. It's just the whole college basketball is just,
think about the
so far gone.
That puts on a 20, 21-year-old who legally, technically can't work.
Yeah.
Right? And it's got to be a basketball practice every day. And the kids, well, she's probably working.
He can't take
not enough time. And you're supposed to be studying, too.
Yes.
And
he can't accept a bottle of free formula to feed the baby. He's not allowed to take it.
She certainly can.
Oh, I don't know.
She couldn't take free formula.
I don't know. That's true. That's his wife.
Well, I do know one guy who loves college basketball so very much. He wishes he were back in it. And that would be John Beilein.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. We'll talk about, Beilein.
It's just unbelievable to me, as they're reporting on Monday as we record this, and it shouldn't be any surprise that he's working on a buyout with Dan Gilbert to get him out of Cleveland, finishing with the NBA. This isn't a second guess. I said this at the time. What the hell was he thinking about leaving a great program at Michigan that he had built, making all that money in Ann Arbor? He was a college basketball god. He ran the cleanest program in America, what success they had, and you're leaving Michigan to go where?
Well, Bob, that's legitimate concern. I looked at it this way. I've been very successful in college sports. I have an incredible I run these offensive sets that are the envy of all, and if I can do this in the pros, it'll be a tremendous triumph for me personally and professionally. Unfortunately, those storied offensive sets were laughed at by his players, and he went back to a more traditional NBA style. He didn't get along with kids there because you control everything in college. I gave you the example of Bo Schembechler when he went to the Tigers, and suddenly not everybody jumped when he said jump.
Yep.
And, you know, he's had some family turmoil also, so he just wants out.
And he's had public and private episodes with players. I mean,
they didn't like him.
They didn't like him at all, apparently. And, you know, let us never not recognize the NBA, professional anything, is a much different culture, much different requirements, much different everything. And you're not being told by the coach you got to be locked down at 10 o'clock every night. You got to make sure you get your grades up. It's got nothing to do with all they care about in professional anything. Win, baby, win, as Dick Vitale would say.
That was
you like that quote? I'm going to give you another quote from a famous basketball coach, Dick Vitale's Bobo, Denny. It's one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard in my life. It's simple. It obtains for all of us and not just about sports. And that is, never mess with happiness. The words of Jimmy Valvano. Never mess with happiness.
I guess it goes with
John wasn't happy at Michigan making $4 million a year. Give me a break. Why, John? Why did you do it?
But I guess it goes with don't rock the boat.
there is also a factor of, by the way, in that book Sapiens that I recommend to everybody, one thing that this incredible author says is that nothing about the human condition can be permanently satisfying. So your satisfaction is never fully met no matter what it is. That's why we see unhappy billionaires and unhappy millionaires. And people seem to have everything, but they're not happy. Because when you think you can find total satisfaction, you can't. That's why. And so that's another illusion that we have. And Beeline said, as great as it's been, if I can make this work, how wonderful will that be? And now he wishes
he looks like Michigan's just fine. That was a really impressive win on national TV over Indiana in Ann Arbor Sunday afternoon. They're killing Indiana, once one of the greatest programs in America. They've won seven straight games against Indiana. Mm-hmm. And Bobby Knight's day, that sure wouldn't have happened. But, you know, Michigan looked good, but they also were at home. And they're not that much better than Indiana. You throw, except Maryland, throw them all into a bag and pick them out.
Yep, it's just a big bag. And although Xavier Simpson was terrific, he had I think he had 10 assists. He had 11 assists. They got six games left. I'm concerned about the center position. I think Austin Davis is actually playing better now than starter John Teske.
At what point does Juwan say, you know what, I'm moving this kid into the starting lineup and take a John Teske out, because John's just not been playing well for quite a while.
He just is his there were a couple times we did a little baby hook that actually hit under the basket, and he's 7'2". That's hard to shoot the ball down under the basket when you're 7'2". So I'm concerned about that. And also, when Isaiah Livers limped off and they were up by 15, I said to my buddy Don, I'm watching the game, would you give up 14 points of this lead to have Livers not be hurt? And he actually did come back, but was an ankle. The groin was the thing that kept him out for nine games. So, they're alive. They're 16-9. They're 7-7. At this rate, they should make the tournament. We'll see what happens.
They're going to make the tournament. Yeah.
You don't know. They have six games left, four on the road, ending at Maryland on March 8th.
State going to make the tournament?
Oh, yeah. I think State.
Absolutely.
No, they got to win a couple games, folks.
You know, you look at all these seeds, you watch these games on TV, and they've got us one of the top four seeds, a number one seed.
Yeah,
State. 25-0. San Diego State. Who the hell are they playing? And the same thing with Gonzaga. And I've been over this so much. Gonzaga plays in a horse manure league. So does San Diego State. You put them in the Big 13 plus Rutgers, have them play on the road at Madison and at, you name it, at anywhere you want. You see what their record is then and see if they deserve to be number one seeds.
But about 25-0, I don't care what league you're
in. 25-0
is pretty good.
Your point is well taken. And the final, I guess you got to mention, Michigan State. By the way, we're going to talk to as we said earlier, Sean Keeler from the Denver Post about some of the craziness that took place.
Yeah. How about
Kathy Klages, former gym coach, Michigan State, convicted Friday of lying to investigators? She's going to go to jail. She said that she didn't recall two players telling her that they've been sexually abused by Larry Nassar, as if you're going to forget that, she faces a maximum prison term of 4 years.
And that's called lying, when you say, I don't recall of something of a magnitude of that degree. It's how the hell could you forget that? Yeah.
Eli, you got the highlights of the Sports Illustrated piece ready to go. If you don't, I do.
I do. And we'll go over
it. I'll read the first paragraph. This is, again, from SI, came out Monday. And I'm quoting, while working toward a deal Tuesday night last to become Michigan State's head coach, Mel Tucker spoke to more than two dozen Colorado boosters and fans at a fundraising event in Denver, soliciting donations while expressing his commitment to the program. He spoke about his passion for Colorado, described his reasons for accepting the job, so on and so forth. But he already had an offer in hand from Michigan State.
That's right.
And he also did three interviews with prominent Denver radio personalities, including ex-Piston Scott Hastings. And while on there, he reiterated, I'm really excited about being here. I'm staying at Colorado. It's mind-numbing.
It's amazing. We'll talk more about it later. But,
yeah, and one thing, let us not jump over the fence here. I mean, there's a timeline involved here, and something happened, and I know what happened, and you know what happened. All of a sudden, the money got big,
right,
major league money.
Because he turned them down on Saturday and wrote a tweet that he's happy to stay in Colorado, and then they came back. And so, you know, Michigan State is very complicit in this, and I guess it's the way it's done. But here they take a guy who's made a commitment to his people, who's trying to do the honorable thing and lift up to his contract. And what do? They say, hey, dude, we'll give you an extra $15 million, and we're going to give another $15 million to your coaching staff. Come on here. Screw all them. So Michigan State doesn't come out of this clean either.
And again, we're going to get the Colorado side, as you've mentioned, coming up in a few minutes from the media angle. But from the boosters in this SI article, one guy, Don Bechter, says, and I quote, it's almost unbelievable Tucker showed up at that big event we had. Really disappointing. Another guy says he's standing there knowing 30 minutes later he's going to accept or already did accept the Michigan State job. Another CU booster. My first thought was, damn, those poor kids.
Well,
lied to those kids. I feel bad for Michigan State folks because I don't think you have somebody with good character quote.
Let me just suggest this. Maybe the deal wasn't done then. That's all.
Denny, you're right, because he didn't. But here's the deal. If you don't agree to it until 9 o'clock Tuesday night, and you leave the building at 8 o'clock, that you've told everybody talk to the boosters and you're raising money and all that, you can rationalize to yourself, well, maybe something will go wrong in the next hour and they'll change their mind. Well, because he hadn't signed it yet, but in fact, his financial guy, his name is Tom Coxhead. Great name. Jeez, I didn't realize that. He goes, I would have been hard pressed to say don't take it. What bothered me so much is he was standing in that room and misleading people. So
maybe he was negotiating. Maybe he was talking to people. My point is,
was,
as this story is written, it sounds like after that booster meeting took place, an hour later is when it happened. Yeah. That's all.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
But he didn't have the deal done while he was in the room. That's all I'm saying.
You're right. So let me use this as an analogy. How many times do we see it in all four sports where a guy suddenly, he might play the first game of a doubleheader in baseball, then he's not in uniform for the second.
Right.
Why is he not in uniform? Because they're working on a deal to trade him so he doesn't suit up and he's not in the dugout.
Absolutely.
He never should have attended this banquet in Denver with this stuff going on. He never should have gone. Those interviews had already been set up, so he felt he had to do them. But he never should have said what he did.
But I think he already said no one time to these people, to MSU. He had already told them no. Then it came back again.
That's
because
they were going to
Because everybody else said no.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's because they were going to give the job to Luke Fickell. I told
that's
you that.
That's what I said.
That's why they all said no.
That's what I said, Bob. They talked to five or six other people, for God's sakes. And he was the guy they could go back to, apparently, because he said probably the biggest negotiating element that he had in his life was, how much money are you really going to give me? And he found out.
And again, I think
it
bears repeating because some people, I don't know why, but a few people out there don't actually listen to every show we do. So in the last program, the three of us said, this is not to say that Mel Tucker isn't going to become an even great head football coach at Michigan State. We don't know. We're just saying the way it was handled was so piss poor.
Well, I'm anxious to talk to this a columnist from the Post and just see whether maybe until this they thought that he was a man of high character. I don't know.
And but maybe he is a man of high character. Let's not judge until we talk to this guy.
But, you know, what I said earlier is kind of confused me. If your name was Coxhead, wouldn't you change it to Cox? His name is Coxhead.
I ain't going there.
Jeez. Anyway,
It'll make you tough as a kid when you're growing up on the playground. I'll tell you that much.
I got a great line, but I dare not use it.
Did you, Eli, imply that we had to mention the NBA All-Star Game 157 to 155?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good news basketball. Is they didn't hit 200.
Yeah, that was a very interesting ball game. I watched
tight defense as always.
I watched a little tiny bit of it, but no. In the beginning, the defense was hilarious in that it didn't exist.
Right.
Kawhi Leonard hit 8 of 14 3-point shots. There was nobody near him. Nobody tried to defend him. No hand in the face. And I sat through many, many NBA practices, more than I'd like to remember, hundreds of them. And you leave these guys to practice 3-point shots from 20, 3-point shots that are uncovered. I would count. And some guys could hit 17 out of 20,
really?
Some 16 out of 20, with nobody covering them, and they're in a rhythm. And that's what it was like for Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, you're right. It's not just the All-Star game, though. When you started describing it in this fashion, I thought you were talking about Roll It Out Mike and the Houston Rockets, because they just leave guys wide open all the time, and other teams make 17 in a row against them.
Hey, you know, one thing you can
talking really, about 17 in a row.
I'm trying to segue into my commercials.
I know, and I'm trying to get you there.
And you're doing a very poor job of it.
I thought I had a segue. It just didn't work. But anyway.
17. Start with 17 in a row.
May I please talk to you about Dr. Yaldo, who I've been promoting for 20 years since I got LASIK from a long time ago. It's a truly remarkable surgery. That lens exchange, whatever you need to get rid of glasses and contacts, there is a way. Modern medicine is remarkable, and as incredible as it still seems that you can do something in a very simple 5-minute procedure to give you perfect vision far away and up close is truly remarkable. That's why some people have a hard time believing it really can happen. But it can. Call Dr. Yaldo, who's done 30,000 LASIK procedures. Custom LASIK is incredibly precise and one of the safest surgery, if not the safest surgery, in all of medicine. Same so if you have trouble with reading glasses. He has procedures to take care of that as well as perfect distance vision. Call him at 1-800-398-EYES. That's 800-398-EYES. The evaluation is completely free. Or else go to YaldoEyeCenter.com.
And our friends at Hall Financial got some things to tell you this morning and questions that they will answer for our listeners. Are you paying more than 4% on your mortgage? Do you have lingering high interest rates on your credit cards? You may or may not know that right now rates are within fractions of a percentage point of their lows of the past 10 years. A lot of homeowners need to reduce their rates, shorten their term, eliminate PMI, or take cash out. Now is the time to do it. Even though the media isn't reporting it the way they should, rates are still historically low, and Hall Financial is the place to call. Don't just take my word for it. Call them at 248-308-5000. That's 248-308-5000. They've had 1,000 five-star reviews from their clients for a reason, because they're good. Call 248-308-5000 and make sure you tell them that we sent them. Me, Eli, and Bob. Equal Housing Lender, NMLS, 1467435.
You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, you mentioned the All-Star game. We don't have to dwell on that too much. It was 157 to 156. What was interesting is what they did with
155.
Okay, 157. Okay, what they did.
The paper said it was a thriller. I'm sorry, I just couldn't make it.
Well, the first three quarters were a joke. That's no defense. And what they did was, and it was really kind of staged because each team won one over the other, and they were gonna eat for each quarter. You got to donate $100,000 to a local charity. What they did though was after three quarters, they took the score, which was 133, and they added 24, which is Kobe Bryant's number, and that was the number that they went to, 157. It was an untimed fourth quarter. So that's okay, and the honoring Kobe is okay.
Sure,
they named
is.
The MVP award after him, which is okay, too. You know, 18 straight appearances. The teams wore 24. They wore number 2, his daughter's number. The other thing that kind of annoys me a little bit, the early entry into the Hall of Fame, he could have waited the 5 years because I think it takes away from the other guys that are going to get in this year, which is going to be Kevin Garnett and Tim Duncan. But
I don't have a problem with that, Eli. Have a problem with that.
But the I'm still in jaw-dropping amazement at the ongoing reaction to Kobe Bryant's death. It's like no one can let go. I'm not knocking Kobe at all. Wonderful athlete, one of the greatest players of all time, and otherwise, except for the legal difficulty he had in 2003, let's leave it there, seemed to be a really good guy. But this colossal catharsis.
He eventually became a good guy.
Eventually, okay. Anyway, no one seems to be able to move on. The L.A. Open, or that's not the L.A. Open, they call it the Genesis now, but it used to be the L.A. Open at Riviera. Even golf. All the sports are making all these overtures towards him. And I've never recall an athlete, when Ali died, when Mickey Mantle died, Thurman Munson, there's been no athletic death in history
that
has come close
to
this.
Let me ask you about the NBA. Why couldn't this award many years ago have been called the Chamberlain Award or the Shaq Award? There's all kinds of players that could have qualified.
Because Bill Russell would have protested.
Bill Russell.
if it had been called the Chamberlain Award.
I mean, my Lord.
Well, fellas, you're talking about this. You know, the other story is more ongoing, if you will, than Kobe. The Astros cheating scandal ain't going nowhere.
It's not going
anywhere.
Did
you see what Dusty Baker did over the weekend?
New manager
of the Astros?
What did he do now to kiss somebody's ass again?
He went whining.
It's all he does is whine.
He went whining to MLB, asking them, please protect my players
this year.
Asked where he whether he would consider throwing at Astros hitters in the wake of this stuff. Dodgers pitcher Ross Stripling told reporters, I would lean toward that, yes, in the right time and the right place. And that was echoed by Indian starter Mike Clevenger, who 2 weeks ago said, and I quote, I think players are going to deal with it the way it should be dealt with across the league. I don't think it's going to be a comfortable few at-bats for a lot of those boys, and it shouldn't be. So, Denny, what would you have done in a scandal like this? When guys were stealing signals from you the old-fashioned way, did you throw at anybody?
First of all, you don't announce it. If you're going to knock somebody down, you're going to hit somebody, you don't announce it in the wintertime as you're trying to get to spring training. You don't do that because every time that guy or anybody comes up playing in that team, somebody's going to get suspicious. God forbid you hit somebody. Just picture this. The first guy steps up from Houston. First pitch of the game, first pitch of the year, and gets whacked, right? What happens now?
Well, it
now
should be over then, but it's not.
No,
right?
You got a bench-clearing brawl right from the very first pitch of the season. So these guys got to shut up. I don't know why they're popping off other than to try to get a little publicity for themselves, but you do not do this. And as far as the Astros go, listen, I still think this is a lot of hell about nothing. When you think about all the other little things that have happened in this game, besides the steroids, now they're talking about bad tattoos. Listen, the White Sox and Cleveland used to use telescopes.
Well, that was a joke.
Wait a minute.
No, he's right.
I'm not kidding.
Right.
Telescopes.
That's technology.
Technology.
Cameras.
Pure technology.
Telescopes like a camera. Technology.
So, let me tell you about something else technology, and this is the grand definition of technology. The White Sox used to freeze the baseballs. Unbelievable. That's technology, isn't it?
Well,
you're using all your air conditioning you can to freeze the balls.
There's a definition I want to give you here, and the term is tipping point, because the Kobe thing, and I'm going to explain later why I think it hit a tipping point that sends it to a degree that no one else could have anticipated. The same thing with this. The day that we started talking about this Astros thing, we had Milt Wilcox on, and you would hear joking, you know, from, come on, everybody steals signs, and the guys, you know, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, and it's always been a part of baseball gamesmanship.
That's true.
Going on forever. We applaud them for that, you know, the craftiness, the Gaylord Perrys. And there were telescopes and binoculars, even cameras and all that. But this became a tipping point for a variety of reasons. And now it's come to where I think one of the reasons is they won the World Series.
Sure.
And the way they handled, they didn't apologize properly.
They still haven't.
Major League Baseball didn't address it soon enough when they knew about it. So a lot of things put it towards a tipping point, which is defined as the critical point in a situation, process, or system beyond which a significant and often unstoppable effect or change takes place. Okay? We call it viral in some cases today.
Sure.
There's 1,000 cat videos. Why does one seem to go beyond all the others? So there's a tipping point here that did it. And then once it starts to tumble, now you got the Long Beach at Little League saying they're going to remove the name Astros. And now you've got players that didn't say a lot in the beginning. Yu Darvish says that, what does he say, they should strip them of their... Hank Aaron said that they should be banned for life.
Out of the game.
Right. And here, in fact, here's Chris Bryant of the Cubs talking about it.
This is people's livelihoods, too, that they're messing with. Like, guys never pitched in games since then. Guys have won awards that maybe they shouldn't have won. Who knows? I mean, yeah, they're certainly talented ball players, but I personally think it's worse than steroids. Everybody around the league is really upset, and rightfully so, because it's really a disgrace to the game.
Yep.
Disgrace to the game, you know, people's steroids are worse than steroids. So it's tipped over.
You know, Boston is still coming, too. They think they're going to have some kind of a decision in the next week or so, whether they cheated. This is way over the top. But you know what? This thing with the ass, it's enough is enough. It's the commissioner who's kept this thing alive. Think about it. Every time he turns around, he has another. And listen, I like him. I think he's done a lot of good stuff. Of course, all these things, stealing first base is not a good idea, and making a pitcher pitch at three guys in a row, regardless of anything else, is a bad
idea.
What
good stuff has he done? I'm curious about that.
Well, he's put some discipline in the game, but nothing he has done will speed up the game, I can tell you that. And that's what his whole purpose was to speed up the game.
Why speed up the game?
I don't know. That's what I don't understand, Bob. Yeah. The game doesn't need to be sped up. It doesn't need it. No way does it need it.
I'm with you, pal. Now, Phil Mushnick, writing in the New York Post in his column on Sunday, takes Astros owner Jim Crane to task when Crane said at his news conference the other day, quote, "Our opinion is that this cheating didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that."
Yeah.
Mushnick continues, really? So cheating gave his team no advantage? The boxer who knocks out his opponent with loaded gloves, impacts his opponent with illegal impacts, would have knocked him out anyway? And a New York Post reader wrote him to say, and I quote, "I suggest the Astros be forced to announce over the public address system the pitches their pitchers will next throw for the next 3 years." How about that?
One of the reasons
we'll see how the Astros do.
One of the reasons it went to the tipping point was just that, and when Carl Ravitch of ESPN interviewed Rob Manfred yesterday and said, "Was it an epic failure?" And Manfred paused for a second and said, "Well, let's say it wasn't successful." And one of those reasons was Crane. And Cody Bellinger also came out wildly against a Crane, who basically said wouldn't condemn or apologize for the championship. His quote was, "Our opinion is that this didn't impact the game." As you said, that's nonsense. Anyway, here's what Bellinger had to say.
"I thought Jim Crane's was weak. I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving him immunity. I mean, these guys were cheating for 3 years. You know, I think what people don't realize is Altuve stole an MVP from Judge in 17. Everyone knows they stole the ring from us.
And we'll never know if it impacted the game. We'll never know.
Well, he said they stole a ring from us, so this is how it gets that.
I mean,
that's
how petty it becomes, stupid at times. And Bellinger's a brighter guy than that. And just because you hit a couple of home runs, Mr. Bellinger, doesn't mean you become the spokesman for Major League Baseball.
So now the Bellinger also brought up the fact, and I didn't know that it was a custom that you tear a guy's jersey off after a game-winning homer.
I didn't either.
Homer.
I had no idea.
But Altuve did that against the Yankees, and the video shows him getting to home plate, and the players are about to greet him.
He's
grabbing his shirt so they don't rip it open. The reason that Carlos Correa gave was that he had an ugly tattoo that was in the process of being made, and his wife also didn't want him taking his shirt off.
Right.
So, of course, the obvious question to Manfred was, well, can we look at his tattoo? Did you look at the tattoo to see if... And so nobody's done that yet. So maybe Altuve have to reveal the tattoo. It's an ugly tattoo. Maybe that'll help him get past it.
And they found a microphone instead.
And see, the only thing that I thought about when they said, his wife said, don't...
Buzzer, not a microphone, buzzer. They had buzzers in there, right, yeah.
When his wife said, don't take your shirt off, and there's nothing underneath the shirt, maybe he's got breasts. I don't know.
Jeez.
Hey, fellas, I want to talk about this. I really think we have to. We mentioned on a previous show, but one of the outstanding players of his time and such a huge part of that Tigers-Toronto rivalry back in the 80s, which was great baseball.
Yeah.
Tony Fernandez.
He did.
57, rare disease over the weekend. .288 career batting average, of course, great defensively. 5 All-Star teams, 4 Gold Gloves. Now, you know I love these baseball reference most similar names. So among the legendary names Tony Fernandez is most similar to, Rowdy Richard, Dick Bartel, Red Shane Deist, Alvin Take a Hike Son Dark, Dave Concepcion, Jimmy Dykes, and you ready for this one? Alan Trammell. Tony Fernandez, what a shame. Also, by way of baseball reference, Denny was talking on our last show about how Boog Powell almost owned him. Baseball reference supported that. Boog hit 338 and 9 homers against Denny and 80 career at bats.
Now, really? Wait a minute. Say that again.
This. Yeah. 9 homers. You said he was the toughest guy ever faced. 9
and 80 at bats.
He had 9 homers. Now, let me ask you this.
80 at bats.
80 at bats.
That's like that's like 15% of the time. He hit a home run.
He hit like 200
you.
Against the
that's
rest of the league.
That's 80 official at bats. I'm sure he walked a bunch, too. 80
I,
official
you bet bats. Your ass now, I walked them.
Now, Kenny, I got some good stuff for you here. I want you to listen to me. For once, I want you to listen to me. Whom do you think were the guys who were the biggest abject failures trying to hit your pitching among big name guys? Guys you owned.
Yastrzemski, Tony Oliva, maybe. I think those two come to mind. I can't think of
Here are the two. In 36 at bats against you, one of my childhood heroes from the Bronx, New York, Rocco Domenico Calavito hit 083 against you.
And now if I'd have known that, I'd let him get a couple of hits. I like
and
Rocky.
Now I know why you wanted Hawk Harrelson to come on this show so you could bust his chops, because he was second worst. Hawk Harrelson in 42 ABs against you hit 095.
Yeah, Hawk was
pretty much owned him.
I liked him, but he was overrated. And he also beat my butt in golf all the time. So
I got two other things for you in this regard.
In baseball? Because I got a baseball one, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, hang on just 1 second. Because after Denny was traded by the Tigers, of course, in 1970, he had to face his best friends.
Yeah.
Kaline winds up in 14 ABs, hitting only 214. And Denny's best buddy, the guy I was closest to, his catcher, Bill Freehand, hit only 182 against Denny McClain in 11 ABs. How weird was that, pitching against those guys?
I want to tell you, it was weird because, you know what, half of the game was talking to each other. You know, Northrup would come up and I'd say, hey, how you doing there, bad mouth? You know, because he had a filthy, filthy mouth. And here I say, take this, you mother, but as I'd let the ball go. I had a lot of fun with those games when I pitched against those guys.
So baseball, as you know, is in a terrible war with the minor leagues. They want to eliminate
we need to talk about 40
teams out of 180, so they want to eliminate a very large percentage of teams. And now to try and, I think, fight the PR battle against that, they are raising the wages in minor league baseball. But I mentioned
that's
earlier
what
how
they
little
say.
Check this out, though. Triple-A players. Now, these are the best minor league players, okay? The Triple-A guys, they're just one notch away from the major leagues.
This is a joke.
Until it's going to be bumped, we're making $500 a week. The season lasts 21 weeks, 5 months. That means they're making about $11,000 a year to play AAA baseball.
What's the poverty line?
Less than that, because
$12,700.
They do have 7 months of the year otherwise to work, but presumably as professional players they have to work. But that's AAA. Class A players, pretty good. They've gotten past rookie ball. They've made it to the past the first rung. They were making $290. Yeah. So that's like times 20. That's about $6,500 a summer. So,
and they gave him a raise to $400. They
gave him a raise to $500. And double A players get up to $600 now, which still for the summer is about $12,000.
And by the way, Major League Baseball last year did $10.7 billion.
And Congress is
You saw that figure? What they made, that was their profit, $10.7 billion?
That was revenue.
Oh, okay, that's not your profit.
No,
it's revenue.
$10.7 billion.
Well, how much money did they make?
Well, who knows?
A lot.
Several billion. 42. So they want to cut 42 of the 160 teams. So minor league players are not represented by the Major League Baseball Players Association, and that's why they can receive less than a living wage. And Congress wants to get involved to at least give them. They should get paid at least whatever the minimum wage is, $10 an hour, for all the hours they work, for all the hours they're there for the team. And now maybe that would preclude the minor leagues from existing. I don't know, but I tend to doubt it.
Well, I suspect that the cities are going to have to come in with both guns blazing, because if baseball really wants to do this, they're defeating. You know, again, we talked about this at one time. They're trying to use the colleges for as much as they can, just like some of the professionals use football, basketball. And I suspect that this won't work very well, because you got to have the minor league teams to develop these kids. These kids are coming up here not ready to play in the major leagues. The major leagues is on a little bit of a downflow for talent right now, and they got to have to do something about that too, because there's a lot of things going on in the game right now. You know, stealing first base, it just gripes my butt so damn bad, I can't tell you. And then the other thing,
you were a pitcher,
that a guy's got to pitch to three guys. You got to pitch to three guys. That's absolutely ludicrous. If I had Boog Powell in the lineup and he was one of the three guys, I would never get to the third guy.
Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Luke Nowacki has a passion for serving clients, has the highest ethical standards, great energy, and he supports you in every way possible. He has so many clients that are so happy with him, and that's why we can talk about Luke Nowacki with total confidence of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Call him at 248-663-4748. He'll create a plan to help you reach your financial goals. People spend too little time on their investments. Let somebody do it for you and then consult with you and suggest to you and make it your decision, but not take up all your time. Retirement may be fast approaching. You can have a like I said, the consultation is complimentary. Answer all your questions. 248-663-4748. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategy. He's been at this for over 20 years, and his clients speak so highly of him, as do we on the No Filter Sports Podcast. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Are the marketing names, products, service, reference here independent of Royal Alliance Associates. Call 248-663-4748, Luke Nowacki. And the lineup of new 2020 Lincolns and Hoop McInerney Star Lincoln, is that it? AR new. Three new SUVs in the last year alone. They're making major waves, from the Nautilus, my car, then the three-row Aviator, a little bigger than I wanted, but so popular. And lastly, the Corsair, a little smaller than I wanted. Already being touted, though, as 2020 SUV of the year. So no matter what you want, what size you want, these three new SUVs are in a league of their own. And there's also, don't forget, the Navigator, the 2018 North American Truck of the Year. What it comes down to is which of Lincoln's four fabulous SUVs fits your taste and lifestyle. Go to Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln and find out. Yes, you get the star treatment, where everyone gets treated like a superstar. It's a 12 and Telegraph in Southfield, Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln, and you've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Now, my note, I want to congratulate Eric Backich. Eli, are you with me on Eric Backich?
Yes. It's a familiar name.
Eric Backich?
I can't think of his. I know it. Who is Eric Backich?
Eric Backich would be the head baseball coach at your alma mater, the University of Michigan.
I knew that.
That's who he would be. Mm-hmm. Michigan baseball is number one in the nation in Baseball America's top 25 for the first time in the 40 years they have done these rankings. Michigan over the weekend went 3-1. And that included a win over defending national champion Vanderbilt. I mean, I have so much respect for guys like Backich who can win at these northern programs, while the kids at Miami and LSU, Florida, Florida State are playing every day because of the weather down here. That's fantastic for Michigan.
You know, one thing I didn't mention about basketball, but we're going to get to Sean Keeler here in a moment, is that tweet from Daryl Morey, according to Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, where he was in support, Morey was, of the Chinese dissidents, that it's cost the league hundreds of millions of dollars because China immediately
cut everything out,
stopped them, you know, took them off TV.
No network, nothing. Absolutely.
He thinks it may be warming, but and then, of course, he got all the criticism for not backing Morey, who basically was defending freedom.
Yeah.
But there's defending freedom, and then there's defending your right to make money in China. So just wanted to make that note.
We're going to get to Sean Keeler, the Denver Post columnist, about the whole situation at Michigan State with Mel Tucker. I wanted to mention one thing, speaking of football, from the website FanSide. Here was the headline I saw today. Matthew Stafford trade rumors. Are the Detroit Lions really clueless? By Robert Jones. Robert? Son, how old are you? How many years, Robert, have you followed the EFLs? Are the EFLs really clueless? Gee, I just don't know how to respond to that.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob. That was
I great. Thought you guys would appreciate that. Well, Denny, the FLs are not the only depressing subject we have before us today. Sunday, national TV, which made it even worse. The Wings scored the first goal, then rolled over and played dead at Pittsburgh. Watching as the Penguins scored five straight before the midway point of the second period to make it 5-1. That was the way it ended. When I was a kid coming up, anytime an NHL team was being embarrassed by another, the losing coach sent out two or three enforcers in the waning moments to initiate some real rough stuff, countered by the winning coach sending out a couple of his goons. That was called showing some fight. It's called sending a message that this will not happen to us the next time we meet. The Dead Wings, zero fight.
But, you know, let me ask you a question. Don't you think the Wings, after the season first started, I mean, yeah, they looked pretty good for a week or two. But, you know, don't you think after the first couple of weeks went by, they saw this coming? I mean, they don't have a goalie that can really do the job anymore. Can't they trade for a goalie?
Well, Bernier's not bad. That's I don't think
Bernier's played very
well. Goaltending is not the
problem. Well, if the goaltending was so good, wouldn't we win one once in a while? Don't we shut out somebody once in a while, even by mistake?
The goal differential is even more stunning than the record. The 14-43-4 record, but minus 106 in goals for versus against is 61 worse than the next lowest team.
Yeah.
To win just 14.
And Eli, a graphic during the game said that Jeff Blashill is now the third longest tenured head coach in the entire National Hockey League. How?
Well,
how does this
happen?
I'll
tell you how. Who the hell would want this job?
No. The only thing is that Yzerman sees the problem as not Blashill's. He sees it.
I don't know what he's looking at then.
I don't either.
It's part of the problem, that's for sure.
Well, and you'd think even just to sugarcoat it a little bit.
Is it Steve's fault or the coach's fault? Something's wrong.
Well, I think it goes back years to the how this roster got to be what it is.
I think they got to figure out some way to bring Mike Ilitch back.
Maybe it's coach.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. And speaking of the NHL, as usual, running on fumes for TV ratings in the U.S., they'll do anything as a shameless publicity stunt. On March 8th, the NHL has announced that in honor of International Women's Day, NBC Sports is going to do the Blues-Blackhawks game with an all-women broadcast and production crew. Kate Scott, play-by-play. Kendall Coyne Schofield and A.J. Molesko, color commentaries. Those two are good hockey players, great hockey players, in fact. And Molesko actually is pretty good on the air, but all women doing an NHL game on NBC. I'm going to watch that.
It's fine. No, nothing wrong with that.
We mentioned the Wings, and we've talked about Michigan State and its problems. The team we didn't mention, though we haven't mentioned, the Lions, didn't mention the Tigers. We can save that for a minute. But, you know, the Pistons had zero All-Stars. And I'll tell you something, that the next All-Star they have isn't currently on this roster. So the next Piston that makes an All-Star team isn't even on the team yet.
That's right.
And that's how they completely left out they were in this great NBA celebration over the weekend.
And fellas, before we get to our interview coming up with the show, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the biggest story in sports today, quote-unquote sports today. Did you see it rained in Daytona on Sunday?
Yeah, they're running
so
today.
They run the 500. They're going to run it Monday as we record this Monday morning. What other sport starts with its greatest events first
and
then
season.
Goes on? Yeah. This year, no truth to the rumor that your boy, the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred, is going to begin the season with the World Series and then play the regular season.
Good
which
idea.
Is how they did NASCAR racing.
Good idea. And by the way, they did a big write-up this weekend on Jake Rogers, like he's the next coming of a catcher with the Detroit Tiger team. I thought he hit like 150
last year. You got to find guys. You got to talk about somebody.
But the guy hit like 150 last year. I mean, how much can you say
about
the guy?
He's a highly touted prospect.
Oh, a highly touted prospect.
Tiger Woods finished last in the Genesis tournament at Riviera Country Club,
last out of 68.
But that doesn't mean he's done. He's just 44.
He made a big announcement. He's only going to play in 12 tournaments a year.
Yeah, well, which is fine. Which is fine. He's 44, and he should play as often as he wants.
Jack Nicklaus played till he was 50-something.
Maybe he was physically in better shape than
Tiger Woods. Look at Mickelson. Mickelson plays almost every week.
Well, maybe he doesn't have the injuries Tiger Woods had.
No, and, I think and, it's got to do with women.
Colin Kaepernick is back in business, announcing his own publishing company, where he wants to tell his story about the story of his evolution. I think we'll save that story.
That'll
for more
be a great story one
time.
Day.
All right. Well, let's Let's get on to our special guest and see if we can get some insight, further insight, into the mess at Michigan State involving new football coach Mel Tucker. And, of course, we got to say goodbye to our radio audience in Toledo, WCWA, and WDFN in Detroit. Thanks for listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. The rest of you, pay attention. We got a great interview coming up right now. Well, Sean Keeler writes for the Denver Post. He's a young writer, but he's been around for some time, covered the Big Ten, went to Northwestern, right? Went to Northwestern, so he's familiar with the Big Ten. This is a very, I think, troubling story, even more so in Colorado than it is here. What is going on here? The story about Mel Tucker knowing he had the Michigan State job and still meeting with Colorado boosters. What's going on out there, and what's the reaction to how you really, as a headline said, were hoodwinked?
And if that's true,
yeah. Go ahead.
I think we're referring to the Pat 40 and Ross Dellinger piece in SI, I think posted Sunday. To be blunt, look, Mel Tucker had a really, relatively speaking in a broad view, nice 14.2 months in Greater Denver Boulder. He had a really bad last 5 days. And the story, we're talking about details, and a really misguided last 5 days or so. He actually had hired, this was not in the piece, here's a little inside story that's not in the SI piece. He had actually hired Chuck Cecil's wife and her PR firm to do some personal branding for him. I'm not sure if that was over this winter or recently, but she and not CU, University of Colorado, had been running point on things he was doing in the off season, right? Mm-hmm. And so I have not met the woman in question, but he was getting some bad advice on all the way down as to how to handle this specific situation because, yeah, it was, to be kind, duplicitous. He was basically being told, keep this girlfriend here, keep this relationship going, but we'll let you know if you're going to get something better. And in case that falls through, just make sure you've got your foot in both ponds. And so, yes, this pond, people are not real happy. Well, and the people who are the least happy are the people who have invested the most financially,
sure,
which you guys saw from the SI piece, and emotionally, in the case of recruits, and recruits' parents, and in case of Drew Pearson, grandparents.
Yeah, it seems so disingenuous, and yet Michigan State can't be free of complicity here because he did turn down the job. And Mel Tucker tweeted on Saturday, how excited he was. I am committed to the Buffs football program. It's great athletes, coaches, and supporters. And then, of course, something happened within a few days to the tune of probably $30 million when you add what he's going to give to the assistant coaches. So it's maybe like throwing heroin in front of somebody who's in recovery in Narcotics, Anonymous. And so how do you view out there, how is Michigan State's role viewed?
I'm not well. Again, the other girl grabbed the guy, but I think there's more blame on the guy in question than the other suitor. If that makes any sense, mm-hmm. that they could be that tempted that quickly. I think this has been kind of a real splash of cold water on CU, not just from the sense of where they are in the college football pecking order. And this has been written nationally and locally too, but the Pac-12 relative to the Big Ten and the SEC. I mean, the Power Five, what this really underscores is when it comes down to what really counts, which is the money.
Right.
There are two divisions within the division. That is to say, there's the Big Ten and the SEC, and then there's everybody else.
See,
and whatever they want, I'm not old enough to not know damn Yankees. whatever Lola wants.
Yeah, Lola gets.
Yep. And the Sparty was in. Sparty was desperate. And I would have thought, if you'd told me 2 weeks ago, I would have, I wouldn't have seen what it had. Obviously, I hadn't been following it as closely as I had in the past. Obviously, I'm a Big Ten guy, a Big Ten native. But D'Antonio leaving the way he did, and this just almost sounds like a panic situation.
Yeah, desperation.
To get something lined up. And I would have thought that Fickell would have been a natural fit. I thought Narduzzi would have been a fit. Everybody that ever kind of went pencil, it's a good job. It's done a great job. It's a good job. And I said to somebody, God, they got more money than they know what to do with. But it's been scorched earth over there by sins of their own design. And that's a whole other podcast topic on a whole other day on the last 20 months at Michigan State. I'll have 20 years if we want to tie it to the things that brought down the administration there. But regardless, they got into a pickle, literally. And I think what surprised us was not that they would talk to Mel, because Mel's got big, powerful Big Ten friends and SEC friends when you're in the Saban circles and in Tressel circles. And I'm thinking D'Antonio's his buddy, too. That's not a shock. But that he would turn it down, be on a fundraising trip with his boss while being approached, then turn it down while being with his boss, and then just keep that door open early last week, this time, literally at this time last week, and not shut it down. I think that if I'm worried about anything, if I'm a Michigan State fan, it's that. It's that this is the guy that, you know, if there is one more step up from East Lansing, what's going to stop you if, you know, Auburn or Alabama one day, and if he's really, really good there, it says...
Well, but what stops but what stops any coach from doing that?
Right. No, true. Yeah, but if he says, you just can't take him at his word.
Right, I see what you're saying.
If that's where his word is out there, I don't know if false. Hey, every working stiff inside us would make the same choice 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
Maybe 99 choices out of 100. And I think a lot of Coloradoans understand the inner, you know, the capitalist fascination they're in. It's that you played a game with people here, and you played them.
Sean, what was it? You knew this guy. You saw him. Yeah. You heard him. Nick Saban says great character. Everybody's about his character. Well, this shows bad character. So my question for you is, because of the financial inducements, if I'm a Spartan loyalist, I want to know, is this just what does it say about college football? Obviously, it says a lot of awful things. But should I excuse him for this, or does this prove he's a bad guy when you thought he was a good guy?
This doesn't show bad character. Let him answer the question. Okay. But, I mean, this doesn't show bad character.
You don't think so? Okay, well.
I might take a mail and put both feet on in the middle there and say, I don't think it shows good character. I think it shows, well, I'll say this, it doesn't show bad, let's take character out of the equation. I don't think it shows bad, I'll agree with you, again. I don't think it shows bad character. I think it shows bad judgment.
Judgment.
And I'll tell you, again, not in taking the Michigan State job. Again, I'm a Midwest guy, I've only been in Colorado a couple. I know Michigan State much better than I know CU, full disclosure.
Sure.
Again, good job. Good place. I've got friends who are on the beat. I've got friends who are on the beat at Michigan. I know the Big Ten. So I understand the logic they're in. But the way that it was handled at the end, again, I just go back to that. That's terribly poor advice and terribly poor judgment to go on that advice. And yes, that would concern me if there are other issues that come up, which aren't guaranteed because I haven't been here yet, but we have a very small sample size, an insanely small sample size, that long term, if this is a long term relationship with Mel Tucker and Michigan State, I would always ask questions about the judgment all the way through, from hiring, from recruiting, from decisions, because this is what you're getting. But I think you're also getting a good coach.
Well,
take it good with the bad.
Sean, let me ask you this. Is he carrying any bad baggage that we're not aware of?
Not bad in the sense of where Michigan State has had bad baggage, no. relative to Michigan State level baggage?
Man. Yeah, relative to Michigan State would be tough. Yeah.
It's been a bad 3 years. And I was at Lambda 10, the old Cox site, writing about some of this too. It's been bad. And some karma has come home to roost, frankly, for a lot of people.
Well,
and that, again, that's a whole other topic. But no, good. This is a very personal person. This has been someone who's talked more about character than he's practiced it, obviously. There have been some interesting people he recruited in the two cycles that he was here that there have been no incidents reported, but there have been some people. Hey, if you want to throw out a skeleton right there, he has recruited, has not signed, a player who was arrested and charged with sexual assault.
Well, that's a good thing. Thank you.
Yeah, but there's one. So, you know, and they USA Today, I think, did a study of these, and I think there was almost one on every. Not to lessen it at all, and that is not to excuse it at all, but there was something like 60 signed who had some kind of record from their youth or as a young adult,
right,
signed by FBS schools. Quite a few.
Yeah.
So, Mel will look the other way if somebody's great, but I mean, relative to some of the things that have gone on there, I don't know if he's got back.
Yeah, and he's in a tough position because Michigan State is trying to recruit against Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame. It's a very, very tough job, and D'Antonio built the success on taking 2- and 3-star recruits and really coaching them up. But let's get off the whole, you know, this.
Well, no, I got one other question. Well, all right, and this might take a long answer. I hope not. The timeline of this thing, when they were having this meeting, raising the money for the fundraiser and what have you at the Denver Country Club, the country club dinner is all over with, and he leaves, and then an hour later he announces, in fact, that he's going to Michigan State. Did he already have the offer when he was at that dinner?
That we don't know, okay. And that I don't know if SI even made clear. Okay. I was on another assignment in Fort Collins with the Colorado State basketball team, and I know that I found out via a booster friend who said that he had talked and had said all the right things, but that it wasn't the same. And I went, oh, well, he's made the statement. And then Bruce Feldman's report comes out at about 11 o'clock Mountain Time, so about 1 a.m. where you guys are. So, you know, that's right. That's why I coined it Midnight Mel, because all this stuff seems to be happening.
Sure.
In darkness while I'm at Walmart picking up some socks or something. And I'm like, what? Did, you know, I said some NC-17 words and just went, because I think that was the curveball that we weren't surprised that what happened Friday, Saturday came and was stamped down. But then, I don't know if it was mentioned in the SI piece, but he had done a radio tour earlier Tuesday.
Yeah, well, yeah, we heard about that.
And that was part of the PR thing. Yeah. And we had all listened to every appearance. He had not done any print interviews that day. And so all of us were listening to all the radio drops. And in hindsight, it was robotic, even by Mel's terms. Yeah. Mel can sometimes fall through his cliches. And he was sticking to the script all the way down the line. And some people asked him point blank, and some people who were not tough questioners, I would say, hey, what happened with Michigan State? What's going on? And he would just simply say, well, I'm flattered to have the interest, and I love the Buffs. And would kind of shove it along and move on to the next thing. Well, kind of be like, and then it wasn't really a no, was it? It wasn't really get anything out of that. Now we know why.
I think that Scott Hastings, our old buddy here, by the way, who we love, was one of those interviews, and I think he's a little hot. But here's a question. Let's get off this whole thing and let's talk about whether he's going to be a good coach. Is it possible to judge him in one season? He was 5-7, as you pointed out in one of your articles. 9 stops since the year 2000, which means one of two things. He's either in great demand or he can't hold a job. I'm not sure which one that is. Can he be judged adequately as a coach, or is that still up in the air with only one season of experience and now he's got a $30 million contract?
Yeah, I think objectively it's a little up in the air. It was trending up here, though. And I think the best thing for all the sand we're throwing at Mel, and the dirt we're throwing on him before we get started, I think the thing that if I'm a Sparty fan that I can take comfort in is that people are angry here, not just because of how it ended, but because they really liked it. And they thought that this is someone who said the right things. Again, I go back to what I said at the very beginning. This was a really good 14.1 months with a really terrible ending. Of that was because he said all the right things, had done all the right things, had gone to all the... And he was Mr. Booster Club function, was a handshaker, was a baby kisser.
Sounds like it.
Was kissed a few teenage butts, too, to get, in a metaphorical sense, to get him here. They were hurting... has shot up. That is his specialty. I think he's going to... I'm jealous. I know people in the state who are going to be reporting about this. Writing about Mel Tucker against Jim Harbaugh, against Ryan Day and all those guy battles, and James Franklin in the recruiting trail is going to be fascinating. You are going to love it. Because they're going to be... Mel isn't going to take his shirt off and climb up a tree. He isn't going to sleep overnight. But I'll tell you what, he will do whatever is in that next tier.
No
kidding.
He will
be sleeping on that guy's front porch.
No kidding.
He will be offering them to introduce them to celebrities. It's going to be, those are going to be the most interesting things to write, or more challenging. At a time when print and all of us are just kind of hanging on for dear life.
I hope so, because we need it. One last question. Has anybody announced that have been recruited at this point in time? Has anybody announced that they want to leave already?
And will they be allowed to? Is the question they make it special?
Well, some of them will. You've got the Alfano kid who was at Alabama, and I don't think I don't know if you can bounce again after he isn't even eligible to play this fall, presumably still won't be after transferring mid-year last year and not playing for the Crimson Tide. We've had a lot of people going to social media and saying, I'm not going to Michigan State. I'm here to be a Buff, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But I think until they see how this is resolved, and because if we've learned anything from this, we can't trust social media and what people say on social media, I think that's a TBD. And I think he's absolutely going to try to poach some kids because he's going to have to, I would think. So it wouldn't shock me if you get a percentage of those, to what degree, and then to what degree, how many, what percentage of those guys come is how much he's really going to get hated relative to what he does to his successor, having left two top 40 classes and one of the top 35, which for Steve is pretty darn good.
That's good.
Sean, really thanks. I really appreciate you joining us. Thanks for the insight. And we, as Big Ten guys, we do all hope that he
we hope he does well.
We hope he does well. Can put this behind him.
Too personally, and let me just say, I like him personally, and I was disappointed how the end was handled, but I think he'll make more friends than enemies there.
Yeah.
And I am jealous, knowing some of the particulars there about him against Harbaugh. It's going to be it's going to be fun theater. If you like theater, you're going to have a good time.
We do. We love theater.
I really appreciate you joining us, Sean. Thanks so much.
Take care, guys.
Have a great day. Thanks again.
Oh, that was interesting.
Well, that sounded like it was a pretty entertaining interview. I'm going to have to listen to that on the playback, because I didn't participate because I couldn't hear a word he was saying, because we're having technical difficulties.
Just a technical
glitch. Some people would think the fact that I didn't participate would be a good thing.
Well,
mailbag?
He says it's going to be very, very interesting, and that he can recruit, and the battles of him against Harbaugh and Fickell and all that's going
to
be very interesting.
I'm interested to see
Ryan Day, pardon me.
I'm interested to see what our guy at Michigan does to go up against this guy. If this guy's as friendly as they say, and everybody's implying, look out, folks. We're liable to see this thing turn around quick.
And by the way, since you didn't hear Bob, the last thing we'll say, he said it isn't so much bad character, it's bad judgment.
Yeah.
So go ahead. What you got in the bag?
Open the bag. A very interesting issue here that was broached on Twitter by Christopher Back, who's a loyal listener to the show. I think that's how he pronounces it. It's B-A-K.
Mm-hmm.
Eli, listen to this. Warren Pierce, whom you and I have known forever, one of the really nice guys in the Detroit media.
He called me over the weekend, by the way.
Okay, go ahead.
Warren Pierce was supposed to have Denny on his radio show this morning to discuss the Astros cheating.
Did you forget?
But they kept getting a busy signal on Denny McClain's phone.
No, let us correct the record.
What's the record?
They had the wrong phone number.
Oh.
They had the wrong phone number.
Well, how'd they get that?
Well, let me tell you how he calls me. Then he calls me at the end of the show. He's off the air at about 5 after 10.
He calls it the right number. He calls it the proper
number. On the right number, he calls me. I said, well, why didn't you call this number? He said, well, this is the one I talked to you on yesterday. I said, does that make any sense to you, Warren, that you talked to me on this yesterday? And wherever you got this other number from, I have never heard of it before.
Jeez. You never heard of it? It's not even a dead number?
Not one of my numbers.
Okay.
No.
Well,
you can tweet us, too. At Eli Zaret, at MU2Denny, and at Bob Page Sports. Here's Joe Cucci. Brandon, this first letter we've ever had, he should be fined in the kangaroo court. First letter we've ever had that started with Brandon. How dare a guy start a letter with Brandon?
Hey, why not?
Why not?
Because we're the stars of the damn show.
Oh, stop. Go ahead. What's the letter for Brandon?
Brandon, your input is a welcome compliment to the experienced three gentlemen you produce. And Brandon, of course, all kidding aside, we agree with that. And you are our guide to the young people of the world today.
Nice.
So anyway, Joe says, Denny keeps telling, keep telling these stories from the past. They're never dull because they're never the same stories twice. I love that.
Whatever Eli, he's smoking, we want some.
Eli, you are a master at keeping things flowing. It's so funny when you stop Bob from his stylistic laying down of a 2-minute intro into whatever topic he needs to vent about. Your interviews are something else. So many of them are with folks I've never heard of. I've enjoyed everyone. So nice that you guys don't have a set number of minutes. You go to so many topics. Bob, if you recall, a few months ago, I said I was learning to tolerate you. Now, I like you.
Oh,
I
wow.
There. Bob, you rock.
Hang on a minute, Bob. Our column. That's number one.
Well, one thing unique about Bob is you can like him and dislike him at the same time. I've found that over the years. Sure. It's a very unique property he has. Go on, Bob.
That's how Billy Martin managed Major League Baseball. Remember, he said, "You got 10 guys hate you, 10 guys love you. The idea is to keep the five who are undecided away from the guys who hate you.
And always keep Reggie on your team."
Larry W. of Canton outside of Detroit. Hi, guys. First, let me say I love the podcast. Avid listener. I'm a lifelong Detroiter. I've loved Eli and Denny for years, and the old locker room show with Eli, Gary, and Gibby was great. I was, however, taken aback by Paige's comments on Monday regarding the events leading up to Michigan suspending Xavier Simpson. First, Bob started on the Ann Arbor police officers investigating the car accident, and he implied they didn't do their job. I would think any type of journalist would do a better job than that, Bob. You asked why they didn't just give him a breathalyzer? The AAPD statement clearly stated the officers didn't smell intoxicants. They can't run around just giving people breathalyzers. There's something in this country called reasonable cause that prevents cops from unreasonably searching all of us. I would think a journalist, if not knowing it, could easily learn of this. If anyone didn't do their job here, it was you, Bob.
Oh,
and you, Larry, are obviously a dyed-in-the-wall, maize-and-blue homer and apologist. A guy wrecks his car at 3 in the morning. The first thing any police officer is going to do is suspect alcohol. No smell? What a joke that is, Larry. Vodka, for instance, has no smell. Ah. The officer was probably just like you, a big, go-blue guy.
Well, yeah, Drew Lane, is always fascinated by the way Michigan fans just are see no evil, that anybody who talks badly about their team is just a hater. But I agree with you on that one.
He went on to hate a little bit more, but he does love Rand, and he loves you guys at least. So that's good. And then the next note we
get
is from JD. JD says, "Hey, Bob, I know you love to rightly criticize MSU, but what about U of M? Why have we not heard one word from Ward Manuel about the Simpson incident? Why is the Detroit media giving him a pass on this? Imagine the media outrage if this had happened at MSU. Imagine your outrage if MSU's AD was silent all this time." So I don't know. I'm confused now. Am I supposed to be a UM homer here or an MSU homer? Which one is it?
I don't doubt that. Let's remember in the old days with the tractor trailer and the turn and the flip over and all that. There's no doubt that police in these local municipalities like Ann Arbor and East Lansing protect the players. I think
absolutely.
That's always been the case.
And see, I always thought our mailbag was supposed to be like a Q&A type of thing. Not that we were doing dissertations.
It's a symposium on Bob.
It's the
world of love and hate of Bob.
Now
Page.
I understand. Go ahead, Bob.
By the way, 760-89-BALLS, 760-89-BALLS to leave a voicemail or a text, that's right, and also asknofilter@gmail.com.
Now we have a thank you to Eli. Oh. And this fan is talking about how much he loved the Jason Thompson interview and us having Milt Wilcox on and the things he didn't know about their problems with Sparky, et cetera. And he says, you know, this, when you think about it, is becoming the new golden age of Tigers baseball. Eli, you do such a great job in summarizing that age, the drafting of so many great players by Bill LaJoy behind the scenes. And that's from Jimmy Lyons, who writes this a lot, but I wanted to get that on because I appreciate that. I appreciate that, and I'm sure Eli does too. Unnamed texter, did any of you three do any due diligence on Mel Tucker other than a headline or other than Bob? Desperate? No, not at all. Also, Nassar victims have been paid. You guys are better than this. Sorry, pal.
We have
not
announced
all
that.
The Nassar victims
they haven't
have not
been
all
paid. All 400 have been paid. What a bunch
no,
of
not,
garbage nonsense.
Not 400.
Damage claims are pending. More Nassar damage claims are pending right now, an estimated $500 million.
And you know
again,
what? They're going to go on Michigan for State. They're going to go on for a long time. You're not going to settle these in a week. It takes months, if not years.
Yeah,
you
know? You're
and
right.
We have
so
talked, and we have
paid.
Talked about it. We talked about it. In fact, I talked about the example at Penn State a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
and he adds, ripping on Tom Izzo. Wow, Bob. New heights of misery. Gee, I guess I have to apologize for that, too, because as we all know, and we mentioned this earlier, Eli brought it up, Tom Izzo is a sacred cow. He's infallible. He is unable or in, capable of making any mistakes, and he is beyond any reproach.
Well, that's really not fair, because last year when he went off on Aaron Henry in the NCAA tournament, I think nationally he took a lot of heat for that, and I think he did.
Yeah, he
and
did.
I think he did alter his behavior somewhat to adjust that.
Right. So this guy, whoever he was, is obviously a Michigan State apologist, and I'm not going to apologize for any of this stuff. We criticize people on this program, the three of us do, only when they deserve criticism, and we always try to be fair.
Yeah, and if somebody disagrees with the criticism, we disagree. We criticize each other.
An unnamed caller to close the mailbag in the show today says, "Hey, Eli, Denny, and Bob, listen to all the podcasts. Love the Jason Thompson interview. Haven't thought about him in ages. I love baseball. Loved him as a kid growing up." So he says, I just want to I'm sure is this – no, this is a lady. I'm sorry. This is a lady writing this who didn't leave her name. She has a suggestion to throw out. Sometime this summer, could you guys have a meet and greet for the fans down at Comerica when Bob is in town?
It's a good idea.
We should do more. We should do stuff like that.
Yeah.
We should get out.
It'd be
real
easy.
We'd probably get at least six or seven people would probably at least stop by.
I mean, we had the other night when we did our wine tasting thing, we had 150 people there.
Nice. I really enjoyed talking to Jason Thompson, so I'm going to respond to that. Sometimes I think I'm being indulgent because a lot of people haven't heard of Jason Thompson. He played here from 76 to 80. Yeah. But to me, that was my golden era. I couldn't believe how amazing it was to just be a sports reporter. It was my wheelhouse. It was fun. It was the only time in my career from 76 to 84 where I still couldn't believe I was getting paid to do this. Yeah. It was just more fun than I could imagine. And I hadn't talked to Jason literally in 40 years. I didn't even know he was in town because he shows up at no Tiger events. And I MC the alumni golf outing every year for the Tigers, and he hadn't shown up. So and I'll tell you what's interesting. When you know somebody and spend some time with them, it can be literally 40 years, and it felt like I had talked to Jason the day before.
Yesterday.
I can just picture talking to him, putting my little radio microphone in his face, and getting an answer.
You know, that's a great point, Eli. So, Denny, let's give Mickey Lolich a call. Get him on and let bygones be bygones.
You call him, Bob.
I will. Or Eli can call him. Sure.
You know what?
Hey, Mick, I want to do a show with Denny and us.
He hates me just because I know Denny.
This is true. He hates Eli because he and I've been together a long time.
We got along great.
Silly.
We got along great, Mickey and I, until I wrote the book with you that he never read but heard was ripping on him. So whatever.
Yeah. My first year covering the team was 74, and of course, growing up in Detroit and being a huge fan of the 68 Tigers, I was in awe of interviewing Mickey Lolich at his locker. He was very cordial. Mm-hmm. He was professional about it, though I looked like I was probably 12 at the time. I never had a problem with the guy, but, you know, I can understand. He used to be a bitter man. I seems to be, anyway. I don't know him as well as you guys do.
To take a step back here, the part of the Jason Thompson interview that I was thinking about all day long, and you asked him the question, Bob, about Mark Fidrich. When he said, and I could feel the excitement. He was a rookie in 76 with Fidrich. Jason Kemp played four games at Evansville, and Fidrich pitched the first month in the minor leagues.
Right.
And he said, didn't talk about a personal thing about his career. That, watching Fidrich and being a part of it, was the highlight of his career. And it's too bad that young people like Brandon couldn't experience that, especially when, as you said, Bob, we've lost a generation of Tiger fans.
I don't understand it. Brandon, I don't think we've actually heard from Brandon. Brandon, I just understand, it seems to me that your generation and younger, you're transfixed on what's happening now, and you believe that all recorded history started around 1987. I mean, I wasn't that way. Eli wasn't that way. We read all we could about the 27
different
Yankees.
Different day and age.
I think it also happens to be the certain individual. I mean, yes, I'll agree with you that maybe this generation and the new generation, the Gen Z, since they have the information and they have social media, the tip in their fingertips, that they're going to basically be attracted to everything that's new, everything that's on video. But there's sports buffs like myself who will dive into Baseball Reference and get lost for hours just checking out all different players from different eras. But I think it's the individual. If you're a baseball nut, you're going to go look back. I knew who Denny McClain was. You know, I've known all the Tiger greats. I know the big, big, big names. But you guys, also, this show teaches me about a lot of that history. It shows me those players from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and hell, even the 90s. And so that's what I enjoy. And I really enjoy hearing from the Jason Thompsons, the Milt Wilcoxes, all those players. It's fantastic.
Now, lastly, aren't you nice? I wasn't asking you to stroke us, but that was a very nice
thing
to say.
Now, lastly, before we go, Brandon was signaling to me that we should talk about Keith Appling. Now, what's the latest on him that you think we should have mentioned on this show, Brandon?
Well, I just didn't know if you guys had a take on his recent arrest. It's a pretty big, I wouldn't call it a huge fall from grace because he hasn't really been a big professional basketball player, but it is kind of another thing against MSU.
Busted for heroin trafficking, right?
There's more than that, Brandon. There's more than that that's going on. I didn't mention it because we've already mentioned it on the show, and it's utterly pathetic and an embarrassment to Keith. I wish him the best in Michigan State. The second follow-up on that story was they interviewed police further about the bust, and they said, yes, he was caught with heroin. He was caught with, quote, a large amount of heroin, end quote. Means he's dealing. Former Michigan State basketball star.
Well, that's
dealing.
The problem. It's one thing to be using something, it's another thing to be selling it.
And it's another thing when you're an athlete and you focused your entire life on being a professional.
And being ready.
And it doesn't work out. Right. And, you know, even to bring up what I did about Xavier Tillman earlier, who I hope he has a great – I don't see him as an NBA player, frankly. He's got the size. I don't think he shoots well. And as we always said, what's his NBA skill, Bob, that would enable Xavier Tillman to be a viable
well, he's
NBA
a great, player? Well, look, he's a great passer and penetrator. I find it hard to believe that he can't make somebody's club as a backup at least. You look at what's happened to Derek Walton after he left Michigan. He was a little bigger, of course, this kid. I love Simpson. I like that kid a lot, and I wouldn't mind having him as a backup on my team, but not a starter. No, he's not big enough. He's not able to defend very well.
The only point I'm making is that when the professional career falls apart, you're already in your late 20s.
You're done.
It's really, really tough.
It's tough to keep it together.
To catch up with people who have been pursuing a different career their entire lives, and now you gotta catch up. Hey, thanks for listening today, everybody. Appreciate your interest. Thanks to Sean Keeler, our guest from the Denver Post, and we'll see you again on Thursday for another sterling edition of No Filter Sports.
Have a good week.
Thank you.